It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich Shurtenlieb, Ken Laird, Ted Johnson. He has won a Super Bowl three times, and you can give us a call. 617-779-7937. A lot to talk about today. We've got, obviously, everything going on with the Red Sox. We are actually live at Fenway right now in the Ford Clubhouse at Fenway Studio. Brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and employee pricing for all. You pay what we pay Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball, and that dirty water. We've also been talking about this Mike Vrabel stuff, and this is indeed Sports Happen, and Sports Happen is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777, and it has been essentially a theme. Mike Vrabel gets asked a hard question, inferring something about the Diana Rossini situation. He gives you about 20 seconds of something that sound like an answer, and then it's like, well, you know, the players and the schemes, and we think we're running things, and then word salad. And then at that point, it's about 90 seconds to 2 minutes of just nothing that bores you. And then, of course, you forgot what the question was. But at least there were a few people out there who asked some interesting questions. There was one more that was kind of along the lines of everything that's been going on with Rossini. And this one was in regard to missing day three of the draft. And that was the first indication that this is not any kind of normal situation where it's just going to be a personal matter and it's not going to affect anything on the field. Missing day three of the draft is a big deal.
It is.
And I don't know if I believe this, but I think I heard Phil Perry say something along the lines of the third day is a lot. It almost like you need a coach more on the third day than the first day, because you know who you're drafting essentially on that first day. Like, it's like if somebody gets taken, you basically have a list and an order of who you're going to get. But day three,
it's debatable. There's you know, guys go back and forth on who they want. And then also the head coach is key in maybe getting undrafted guys to sign with you.
Yeah.
By talking to those guys. So that in Mike's clearly one of his better skills is interpersonal relationships. So, you know, you also want him to be able to talk to those undrafted guys and say, hey, I know we didn't draft you, but we want you to come try out for us, and we'll give you a contract. And that's his, one of his better skills as well.
Yeah, so spin it how you spin it. Day three is a big deal. And I think this is the one where Greg Bedard asked him about it. You got it, Stiz?
I got you.
We have not talked to you since before the draft, so I'm going to try to narrow this down. Your thoughts on day three when you weren't there? You know, whether you regret that not being there, and Elliot said you were not in contact, but also what's the plan for, and your thoughts on Caleb Lomu and Gabe Adams?
Stop it.
What?
Why did you do
Great
that?
Job.
Why did you do that? Ask the one.
Maybe Stacy said last question. I don't know.
No, also, there were more after that.
Okay.
Come on, Greg.
You're
really good at your job. Greg, you're one of the best reporters out there. Don't give him an out.
But also,
you know what? So he didn't want to ask that question. He knew that that question might come off wrong, and that's how he padded it with a Lomu question after it.
I know.
A two-parter. Come on, Greg.
Fair question about Lomu, though. We're wondering.
I don't care about Lomu right now. I don't. Like, this is his first time. There's going to be plenty of times to ask Lomu questions. There are. What we wanted to know was, and by the way, great first question. Great question. Mm-hmm. The draft, it's a big deal. You missed straight through the draft. Do you regret doing that?
Stop talking.
That's right. Then just stop. Somebody pull the plug on Bedard and just let him answer.
Did you understand the third day? Like, did you understand why he needed to do that? Do you think the team made him do it? Do you think he wanted – what was the strategy in missing the third day of the draft?
To me, I think they thought, we need to do something. We need to throw some chum in the water. We got to give up something that appears like we care, and let's take the least offensive day possible and let that be the day to make it feel like a sacrifice.
Could it be in a Sunday or the Monday?
No, the Patriots wouldn't want to cause any more attention to what was going on. The Patriots, I'm sure, would have rather had him stay every day. I guarantee you what it was. It's Vrabel trying to prove to his wife, here's how serious I am about wanting to make this right. I'm going to even step away from my job for a day. Because you're more important to me than football at this moment. I think that's what it was.
Could be.
It was him falling on the sword for his family, because I guarantee you the Patriots sure as hell don't want another controversy.
Play the tape forward, though. People, if they get off to a bad start, and he couldn't even be there for the draft.
Right, I know.
You couldn't wait one more day, Mike. Just wait one more day, then no one can say You didn't miss.
Well,
you didn't
make the, listen to this answer, because he does answer Bedard's first question, and I don't. It's a little surprising, his answer to me, Stiz. If you can play the answer.
But also, what's the plan for and your thoughts on Caleb Lomu and Gabe Backus?
No, again, they moved around. They made some trades, and again, this draft was pretty unique. I don't know, you know, if it's really been talked about, but they're just the volume of players in the draft wasn't what it normally is. And we saw a lot of players that went back, you know, to school that probably could have come out. I would imagine that it's the NIL and their ability to go back and play for being compensated in college. So the numbers were down. And so the number of, you know, players in that pool was down. So I just felt like that was interesting. We moved around, you know, excited about the players that we got, you know, studied most of them. They knew my affinity for some of the players that we took.
And then admittedly, right. At this point,
he was about to say, admittedly, I don't know all 200 guys in the draft. So he downplays the draft. He said, basically, it's a bad year for the draft. The last day was a bunch of nobodies, yep. And I didn't know them anyway, which I don't think that's a very good answer for the coach. Even if that's true, you shouldn't be admitting that, should you?
No. Nope. Definitely not. Yeah, I never thought it was a good decision that he did that. You want your coach there for every round.
Yeah, and you're right about the undrafted guys. That's a great point. He should be the guy on the phone, yeah, convincing whoever, Lan Larrison of this year, to come, mm-hmm, here and play for your program.
I don't know if I'm going to know the 300th player in every draft.
So, I mean, I guess that's true. He's
kind of your job.
He's not the GM. He's not the nerds in the front office. But
he's got to be the ultimate decision maker, right? I mean,
right.
Isn't he kind of the, if not the last guy, the second to last guy who's got to be able to give a thumbs up, right?
Maybe not though, Rich. Because I mean, look, I don't think Belichick had much of an opinion when it came to when we drafted Brady. I mean, that was Dick Raybine.
That's true.
That basically told Bill that you need to take this guy. So,
well, that's true.
I think there's some you know, truth to the fact that the head coach probably doesn't know every single guy in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, and what their capabilities are.
But and I'm sure the area scouts are the ones that make a lot of these picks or suggestions. But that being said, when you're about to take the third string quarterback, you probably want Mike Vrabel there to say, hey,
weigh in on it.
This is going to be your guy if you have an injury or two that's playing games for you. This decides your future. You know?
For sure. So, yeah, I didn't like the idea. I don't know. I mean, Jen, I can't imagine Jen was like, you got to come out on Saturday. I don't like.
You don't think that impressed her?
Huh?
What about the thing he bought her at the airport?
That probably, you know what?
Some duty free chocolates. She got a big giant Toblerone.
That probably made up for everything.
I love
that sweatshirt he got her. Whatever that was, man. Oh, dude.
He got her like some Fireball.
One of those little things you shake with the snow that comes with
it. Sure, a little snow globe. The snow globe. Toblerone. Oh, I never found out about Caleb Lomu. Come on. Can't we play that clip for another, like, 3 minutes and find out what he says?
Can we get nerdy real quick? Just real quick.
Sure. I love the nerdy stuff. Just, come on. Talk nerdy to me.
Just football stuff. Like, Lomu. What do you – he was the seventh tackle picked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Reports are they think was, like, the third best. If that's the case – that would be incredible. And some – there's theories that maybe, just maybe – that was more of an Elliott Wolf pick than it was a Vrabel pick. That there a possible power struggle behind the scenes.
And why is that? Because Vrabel loves Campbell?
There's a different yes.
Well, then Elliott Wolf's right, because you needed some sort of insurance plan.
Unless he was hurt.
Don't you think? Don't
unless
you think,
Campbell's
Ted?
Yes.
MCL was so bad, like Vrabel saying, when healthy, he was good. Because he was good the first 12 games of the year before he got hurt.
Like, the profile of the player, I don't think he's like it has the same mindset as a Will Campbell. Like, Vrabel looks for that type of mindset. If this guy's a little bit more happy-go-lucky, I will say this. Some of the best tackles, Matt Light, never took anything serious, and he was a great tackle. So, but what I just want to say this about Caleb Lomu. He looks the part. That looks like a guy that is going to be an offensive tackle in the league for a long time.
Long arms.
Huge. Boy, wide shoulders.
Yeah. He looks so young, too. Like, he's got, like, a baby face.
He does.
So,
he
I
does.
Mean, just think what he's going to be in about 5 years. Dude's going to be, I mean, he's just going to get bigger and he's going to get stronger, yep, being in that conditioning program that they've got there.
By the way, today he did not take any left tackle snaps that the media saw. He rotated with Moses at right tackle. So, if you want to get real deep, Caleb Lomu, right tackle today. Even though Vrabel said he might get some work at the left side. He didn't rule that out.
I'm going to guess that Will Campbell will be your starting guard.
Ooh.
Next year. And Caleb Lomu will be your starting left tackle next year.
So,
next year.
So when Wenyu's going to go, they won't pay him.
There you go. That's it.
And that makes sense. Yep. Yeah, makes all sense. The sense in the world. Another thing that was addressed was a big question that we had yesterday about Christian Gonzalez and whether or not Christian Gonzalez would hold out. And really, how long will he hold out? Because will the Patriots do something that they never do? And that is set the market for a position player. And right now, when you take a look at what Gonzalez is going to be able to demand, that's the kind of contract he's going to have. It's going to have to be one that sets the market. So if you're him, do you go to practice? Do you possibly get yourself injured? Or do you stay away and say, you know, it was Logan Mankins, you know, what was that? Was that 10 games that he, you know, stayed out and sat out?
Yep.
So Vrabel was asked about it, and I don't know what's happening here, and I got a feeling we're in for a nice long offseason until they figure this all out. Let's take a listen.
Because you mentioned Gonzo, and it's just interesting on Gonzo because he's eligible for an extension for the first time. How much of his spring participation has been maybe impacted by that dynamic of the contract?
I don't know what that, again, those are personal choices for players. I would say that I value the communication that I've had personally. I know that our defensive coaches that have had conversations with Christian, you know, again, I wish that they were all here so that we can coach them. But the ones that are here, that's where our focus will be, and we'll pour everything that we have into those players. But I know that his professionalism and being ready to go, or whatever personal choice that these, you know, some guys have during the spring, you know, I'm confident that they'll all be ready.
All right, Teddy J, look into your Patriots crystal ball. What do you see? What do you see? How do you see this playing out with Christian Gonzalez?
He'll get his new deal 2 weeks before the season starts in August, middle to late August. He'll get his deal. I can't imagine Drake doesn't get the deal he wants. The Christian doesn't get the deal he wants. The crafts, those days of nickel and diming guys are over. The cat is out of the bag. Everybody knows what the cap's all about. You cannot avoid it, man. And you know, Mike's culture is going to be one where he takes care of his players.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, you know, try to have the culture that Mike's trying to establish and then cheap out on guys.
Yeah,
because people will be like, "Nah, bro. Yeah, you might be fun to play here, but you don't get paid here." And that's ultimately what guys want to get paid.
You said something yesterday that I kept thinking about, and that is that when Drake May ultimately has his payday, you were saying that you believe that he is someone that could end up getting upwards of $400 million guaranteed. Isn't that what you're saying?
I did, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, which is insane because I think Josh Allen holds the record right now at 250, but we're going in that direction. Do you think, would you put it past the Crafts to sit him down and try to talk to him and say, you know why we won so much when Tom Brady was here? Because Tom Brady was willing to take one for the team. And we will make sure, Drake, that we do everything we can to put the best weapons all around you. If you just take a little bit of a pay cut from what you believe you are worth, can you see the Crafts doing that?
It's not the craziest thing to suggest that. No, I almost could see them doing it. That contract is going to hurt them more than anything.
Yeah.
So that sounds outrageous, knowing what we know now.
Yeah.
Versus what we all knew 20 years ago when they were pulling that stuff. Part of me would not be surprised if in a roundabout way, like butter them up somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know. Take them on a trip. You know, kind of
take him on a trip.
Yeah,
buy him a new kitchen for the wife. You know.
Go hunt some.
That's
humans.
How they got me to sign.
Well, really?
Oh, yeah.
Where'd they take you?
Right. down to West Palm, play some golf, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Ate at the Breakers, you know, yeah. And then I signed about 2 months later, you know. So.
Did you sign at 2 in the morning at some establishment?
I did not.
Under a heel?
Yeah, I played 2 rounds of golf with the old man and lost both times to him on purpose.
Nice
so,
job.
Yeah,
purpose.
You gotta do the dance, man.
Is that a normal, my arm.
This is great. Is that a normal thing? Like when they're trying to, like, you know, get somebody to sign, do they take them on a trip usually?
I don't think that was normal. I think that's how they handled me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you were a star.
I was a budding star. Yeah. There was at the time I signed my deal, yeah, I was considered one of the best in the league.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And it worked on you, huh?
Are you kidding me? Dude, they it's like, yeah, I can get used to this.
We
all
got
right.
one.
Yeah, man. Are you kidding? And You know how it's funny, real quick story on that is all I said was how the deal came together and just finally we signed off on it was Willie Mack and I were both doing the deals at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I saw what he signed for. And I said, I'll take what Willie Mack's been taking. And they said, okay,
ooh,
that
awesome.
Was it. You know, we lost a great player in Curtis Martin to the Jets. So we couldn't sign. It's like, well, you can't sign everybody. I'm glad they chose me and signed me. So, you know, go on a trip, whatever you got to do, soften them up. You know, I would not be surprised.
What do you think Drake May's ghost screw factor is? Like, how confident are you or not confident that he would just say, thank you so much for your trip, but I am worth every penny of that $400 million
guaranteed? I think he's that guy. See, Brady, 6th-round draft pick, 199, I had to sing for his supper. Completely different mindset than 3rd overall pick. Runner up for MVP in his second year. You know, Tom initially was kind of a passenger on that, on this train. You know, Drake is driving the bus. Totally different mindsets between the two quarterbacks.
That's, you know what? And I also think it's a generational thing. Where you take a look at it and you see, you know, that these careers are a lot shorter than they've ever been because of the money that you get. And I guarantee you, behind him is a machine. His agent, everybody else is saying, you're going to get every single penny that you, because you've got him by the nuts. Like, you have the, you are the one in control. You have all of the cards with the Patriots.
Don't you think, I mean, this good old boy, kind of charming, marketable, good kid, great leader, stays out of trouble. The value that there is in having a quarterback like that is enormous.
Well, yeah. I would think Robert Kraft would appreciate that after having gone through the post-Brady years until they got Drake. It wasn't that long, but it was long enough that you saw Cam Newton come in, you saw Mac Jones come in, you saw, you know, Jacoby Brissett, and you let that drive your decision-making.
Yeah, you're right, Ken. Like, if I'm Robert Kraft, I'm like, I'm not sweating it as I'm writing that check. It's like, I feel pretty good about this investment. Like, this kid isn't going to, I don't think, do something to embarrass the organization the minute after I give him this money.
It's weird. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, if I'm the Krafts, like, would I try? Would I at least try? But then again, it's almost kind of a dick move. Yeah. You know, it's like saying,
wait, you did that for Ted Johnson?
Right. It's like, it's almost like Drake would be like, do you think I'm an idiot? You really think I'm going to take less? So I don't know. I don't know what I would do if I were the Krafts. I just wouldn't put it past them to do that because they can always say the greatest of all time took less money and look what we were able to do. I can see them doing that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but either way.
Gonzalez is first, and he's got to wait for Devon Witherspoon of the Seahawks who wants more money. So there's other pieces to fall. But even worse than that, the attendance was not great today. Your guy Akis didn't even show up for the first day of OTAs.
Do we know why?
No.
Yeah, I'm curious. Carlton Davis wasn't there.
No Carlton Davis.
So
Booty wasn't there.
No Matt Collins.
No surprise.
No Landry.
But the two starting corners not there is like,
that is interesting.
That's not the best.
Yeah,
no, not the best. All right. We will take your calls next. 617-779-7935. Also,
937.
I'm sorry. Did I 7937? On top of that, guess what? The greatest coach of all time won coach of the year. The person who puts out the best starting lineups in game 7. He is a genius. Does that mean he's going to continue to stay with his weird-ass ways? We will talk about that next.